Second hour here, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Proudly sponsored by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Paul Kaharsky in today and tomorrow for Robbie Stanley, who is continuing to enjoy Disney World in Orlando.
55, Rexy. I got right out of bed. No different than 54.
Oh, my gosh. It is your birthday. Oh, what?
He got
totally
donuts.
Blew it.
Paul, I got you donuts
got
for your birthday,
Bismarck.
Too.
You got a birthday at Bismarck.
He got me a bunch of donuts.
Well,
I've only had one.
Happy birthday, Paul. Five, huh?
Yeah. So does that sound that big? How old are you?
Those are special 5'1". So those are the special, what do they call those? You know, 11, 22.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like your double-digit whatever birthday. I don't know.
Felt pretty good getting up.
Yeah,
at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, good for you.
I'll feel pretty good taking a nap today.
Did you drive through snow flurries like I did today?
At the very end, yeah.
Yeah,
got
a little intense there.
When will we see the sun again? Is there any prediction
later today?
Later today?
We will today.
During my nap?
Probably. Same here.
Do we have
It's bad when you take a nap late enough in the day that you wake up when it's dark.
Yeah.
That really throws things off.
Yeah, that's the only really quibble I have about, I love Central Time. And typically the climate here, but you never have it. Just it's dark so early, especially this time of year. So do we have big birthday plans? Like
no
big dinner going out? Anything like that? No?
It's not been discussed.
Okay, well maybe you're getting a surprise. Who knows? You have to tell us tomorrow how it goes. Now I forgot what we're going to talk about. Oh yeah, we're going to talk about the Tennessee Titans and the player acquisition. Because obviously last week was about Brian Callahan. It's now about who's leaving, who's coming in, his coaching staff. We got the Senior Bowl coming up. So one thing there that's interesting, it looks like a lighter presence than the previous regime had at the Senior Bowl, correct?
Well, he's got to get his staff together. I think I remember Vrabel going down there. He's interviewing for his staff down there. So – while he's trying to look at some players, and it's kind of if your full attention isn't on one, how much are you getting done of either? Not saying that he didn't get his work done, but it seems like a practical thing for Brian Callahan to stay here and work on his staff.
Right. So we did a podcast Friday. You and I did it with TD, with Andrew. That's Buck Rising.
I like that you took over control of the podcast, and we're doing a lot of the question asking. It was wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, I just had some good questions. But
yeah, they were questions.
Well, they were questions, yeah. But one of the things we were talking about this, and like TD pointed out, every stitch of film on these practice sessions available for anybody. So, it's good to be there, I'm sure. It's good to talk to the guys, see it in real life. But you've got everything available to go back through, look at film, and things like that. So – That's what's going on with the Titans. But here's one thing that kind of – maybe I'm overreacting to this, PK, but this is even as we were talking to Brian Callahan, and as Brian Callahan has talked in other interviews and things like that, like I thought Jared, by the way, did a really good interview with Brian Callahan, and they got into a little bit of, of the roster stuff. I come away from it. Regardless of who has what title, and we know that Rand Carthon's in charge of the 53, and I do think final say is a little overrated. I do. So you can argue with me on that.
I will.
But I get a sense that Brian Callahan is has very specific ideas of what he likes in players, and that he's going to be, not that this is a surprise, but like that he's going to be very strong in terms of what they're doing with the roster. And again, I think this is what you want from any coach. I mean, you may not want a coach to have roster control. You don't want Belichick. You don't want Vrabel asked for all that stuff. That's fine. But you do want a coach who has a very strong voice. And, for example, Mike Mularkey talks John Robinson into Derrick Henry, basically, right, because of Blake Bedingfield. That's what you want, and I think that's what the Titans are going to have.
Well, Robinson shouldn't have been giving Vrabel players he wasn't wild about, right? And I think occasionally He did, at least in some instances. I don't think Vrabel was a Caleb Farley guy. I know he wasn't a Vic Beasley guy, right? I don't think Rand should have done that. He didn't have final say. It was collaborative. But you hear some whispers that maybe Vrabel wasn't that into Will Levis. I don't know. We've talked your words, I think, on Rand as a benevolent dictator, right? He's got the power, but he's not going to abuse it the way that Robinson, I think we could agree, ultimately did. It sounds great, you know, this we're going to agree on everything. But ultimately, there comes time. You know, they run all the scenarios. On number seven, there should be no surprise. They've run every scenario where six guys are gone in front of them. In this scenario, we take this guy. In this Sure. scenario, we take this guy. We've got everyone prepared. But later, there are surprises. You wrote about it with Diana. Kevin Dodd, they get there, and that's a surprise. They get to Derrick Henry, and there's discussion going on in the moment about convincing Robinson.
Yeah, he wanted A'shaun Robinson.
Which would have been a disaster. They convinced them to take Henry. Blake kind of convinced Malarkey, who kind of convinced Robinson.
Malarkey was his way in.
There's a lot that goes on in
and
the
moment.
And
that's all good stuff.
Well, final say is important there. You got to convince the guy with final say, maybe. But ultimately, when you trace it back, there's late convincing, and final say is absolutely important there. So Isaiah Wilson, I think Vrabel was in on. But when it's a broad bust like that, you got to trace it back. And that's on John Robinson. That's on him being able to ultimately say yes, whether Vrabel wanted him or not. You're taking Vrabel's advice. You're taking your Southeastern scouts' advice. You're taking all of your interactions with Isaiah Wilson, and you're saying yes. And so when it comes time to account for the bust, it's ultimately on you. So I don't care if Brian Callahan wanted so-and-so. It's ultimately going to be on Rand. And so Rand can say, well, Brian wanted him too. I don't care. You pull the trigger. Yeah, you were the guy.
Look. It's clearly defined, and that's good. And so, yes, whatever happens here, good or bad, good, that's who gets credit, bad, that's who gets blamed, right? And that's fine. It's good that it's clearly defined. There's still a lot of teams in this league where it really isn't. And the Titans obviously tried to go that route last year, and it's just, especially when things, the problem is, like, again, when things are going well, it really doesn't matter that much, right? I mean, it's like, dang, you guys are a great partnership. I mean, with the Niners, you know, like John Lynch has gotten a lot of credit in his staff, and Rand gets hired here. Adam Peters now in Washington. Well, you know, that is Shanahan, right? And that's actually written that it's Shanahan. But I still look at it like a collaboration. I'm just saying you do – even if you have final say, yes, it's on your record. But that example is to me an example of why you can have final say, but how many other times did Robinson – get talked into by Malarkey or I don't know, or Vrabel. Yeah, actually, no, I really like this guy. Okay. I mean, yes, you have the say, but as long as you're not just saying, sorry, I've got final say, sometimes you have to do that. But, you know, I think that if you don't have the back and forth and the willingness to come off what you were resolved to do, then I think you're going to be in trouble.
Well, here too is where I think – we'll be able to tell some things. Did they all of a sudden, I mean, Joe Alt's a different guy. What happens at seven is different. But later in the draft, do they begin to identify better offensive linemen? Do they begin to identify better wide receivers? If they do, I'm going to give Callahan some credit for that. I know we've only had 1 year of Rand, but it's been poisonous here at those positions for a long time. So credit both of them, but Callahan is the newest set of eyes. He comes from a wide receiver place, certainly.
That's the thing though. It's just hard to know, like with Rand, you know, they took Dowell in the seventh round. So, you know, when they moved up to get Levis, they lost out on some guys they probably would have taken, right? I mean,
but they also laughed at us. On
I knew you were going to bring that up. They did. Is that what that were that was that really?
That
what
was
they
in
were
a
doing?
Fifth round when they did not take a receiver. I think. It was in the fifth round, maybe after tight end. Does that sound right? After they took
I don't remember.
Cincinnati.
It was somewhere in there. Yeah. But of course they had taken. But
I would be advised. Like, if I'm Amy Adams drunk pre-draft, I would say, hey, by the way, fellas, don't gesture to the fans in any way that could be taken in a poor light on TV. Just act like complete pros.
See, it's like people were upset in that moment, so I guess it looked like it was that. But, I mean, what's wrong with smiling and waving at the camera?
Because people
were upset.
Took it like that. There was a lot of room for it to be taken like that. And you've got to understand the situation.
All right, we come back.
That was a crappy PR moment. Crappy.
All right, we come back. We'll continue on this discussion. Titans, personnel acquisition, final say, et cetera, et cetera. Robbie and Rex are 102.5-106 for the game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan this Wednesday night for Vanderbilt men's basketball. The Commodores take on Auburn on the road. Tip off 8 p.m. pregame beginning at 7:30. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. 102.5-106.3 The Game, broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Paul Kuharsky in for Robbie. We are talking Titans, coaching staff, player acquisition, final say. I want to read this to you on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. PK from Zach, who is active today on the text line, as many are.
Zachary.
He's talking about the DC CEO thing that we've talked about. Zach says, a problem with Martindale, he's not adaptable or flexible in deploying his defense. McDonald is, with the Ravens, of course, and Denard Wilson theoretically should be. You don't want a vet/older DC because those guys aren't really a match philosophically lined up with Callahan. But give me the last thing. Why does that not line up philosophically with Callahan?
Well, he's saying that Callahan is adaptable offensively. Said, you know, if we need to throw a bunch to win, we will on a given week. And
if
he's saying
if
that
you're
Martindale,
not adaptable, then
Martindale
I don't want you.
Adapt or die, Dick LeBeau said.
Yeah.
When Terry Rubisky said, no, we're just going to do what we do.
What was it? Run it till it pops?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in general, like, to me, like, I don't know. If Wink Martindale is that much of a just stick in the mud and not adaptable, then okay, then I'm okay.
Right,
no,
yeah.
Don't
we'd
want
be out, we'd be
to
out
me,
too.
that's got to be a prerequisite to be a successful coach in the NFL, doesn't it? To be adaptable?
Circa 2024, absolutely.
I mean, circa any time period. I mean, well, you know,
I mean,
once the Dolphins started running, you know, the Dolphins started running Wildcat with Ronnie Brown a few years ago, you know, you figure out what they're doing and you deal with it. I mean, you have to adapt all the time, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that should be already baked into any
hire,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ron Rivera, another one thrown out there. You know, what about, you know, is Dan Quinn getting the Seahawks job? Who's getting the Seahawks job?
It sounded now like maybe McDonald.
McDonald might get it. And, of course, works out for them in terms of, you know, he's free.
He's free now. I mean, they could have talked to him this week anyway, but they would have had to waited 2 weeks to hire him. And I don't know if they could have talked to him this week because I don't think they talked to him initially because they fired Carroll late in the week and you had to have talked to. So I don't think they actually could have talked to him. So that was a good result for them, as you're saying.
Yeah. So
I think, let's say it's McDonald off the board there and Johnson off the board for Washington, and that would be the end of your 2024 coaching cycle. Belichick at home, Vrabel at home.
Dan Quinn
remains,
I mean, again,
in Dallas, which is good for Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess he just it's not like Dan Quinn because he's interviewing for head coach. In my mind, I'm like, Dan Quinn, get him as DC, but yeah, you couldn't. Unless the Cowboys wanted to get rid of him, and I'm sure they'd be happy to have him back, right?
Despite that last game. Yeah.
So I posed this on the pod we mentioned to you guys, and you all, you know, poo-pooed me. Mike Vrabel, as we've discussed, you know, the way things are going in this league right now doesn't favor him, right? I mean, no. I'm surprised that he hasn't. If he ends up with no job, I'm definitely surprised. Raise my hand. I was wrong.
Same here, wrong.
But you don't think that Mike Vrabel would – I mean, I expect him to sit out and get paid.
Well, he's got no choice.
Sure. Well, unless –
barring Seattle.
Well, unless the thing that you guys all poo-pooed, why would Vrabel just completely dismiss a D-coordinator opportunity? I mean, next cycle, I don't think he can. This cycle, he can, but – what if there's a really good DC opportunity and he sees it as a way to, one, stay in the game, keep doing it, and then also and then bounce back. And now one quick answer to that this year is, well,
make Amy eat it.
Well, and how much of a difference in pay are we talking? Probably pretty significant, like hugely significant, right?
Yeah, but I mean, she'd be paying him.
You're
the
offsetting,
yeah. I just think if he's going to get into a place where he'd be willing to coordinate, which maybe he'd have to do in a year, it would take him a year to get there, headspace-wise. I also think next year, and maybe this is naive by me again, I think next year some of the jobs that come open, Giants, Eagles perhaps, Dallas perhaps, are jobs that might be better suited for him.
You think he's an NFC East guy?
I kind of do.
I get it.
And an AFC East guy, Buffalo. Those jobs strike me as better suited for Mike Vrabel than the Chargers job, than the Falcons job. So maybe I'm just forestalling my – I was wrong. I'm saying I was wrong, and maybe I'll be wrong again next year. But it seems to me he's better suited to those jobs. Those owners might like him better. Then if he doesn't get those jobs, maybe he does have to go be a coordinator somewhere to – I don't want to say rehabilitate himself, because I don't know if it's about that. I don't know when it cycles back to you wanting that guy. What has to happen is – a load of those offensive guys have to get a job until you say, well, when does the autocratic
one or two failing would help too
become preferable for my organization.
Yeah. All right. Phone line driven by Wilson County Honey.com. Kenston, how you doing?
What's going on, Joe? What's going on, fellas? Come on, Paul. I've never been a fan of the mock draft before free agency. So in the player acquisition kind of headspace, I kind of thought the Titans should at least go out and sign two tackles and get a center. And based on what one of the Bengals beat reporters was saying last week on local radio there, doesn't seem like T. Higgins or the Bengals are interested in anything long-term with him. So in the headspace of the Titans kind of addressing the O-line and maybe getting some type of starting wide receiver in free agency, does that then put the seventh pick in a position for the Titans to move back, a la John Robinson's first year when he made a lot of trades and kind of got a lot of picks that turned into key players for us? I just kind of want to get you guys' opinions of if they address the O-line, specifically tackle, and maybe get a high-end wide receiver in free agency, what do they then do with the seventh overall pick?
There's no left tackle to be had in free agency. There's like four, and they stink.
And that's typically the case, right? Yes. Like if you get a
same thing as a you know, number one stopper cornerback or an elite wide receiver, which happen to be the three positions that the Titans need, you got to draft them and grow them and re-sign them. But there is damage you can do on the offensive line. Hunt,
you can get better.
Hunt is a guard in Miami. Zeitler is a guard in Baltimore. Cushenberry is a center in Denver. You get two of those guys, or the right tackle whose name doesn't roll off my tongue from New England. You get two of those four guys, you're cooking on the offensive line in terms of improvement. Then you add a left tackle in the draft, and you're really cooking.
Yeah. And in general, I mean, I think trading back is always worth talking about, but I think this year, if you can get an alt, I think you don't. Real quickly, Ed on the phone line. Titans, you want to talk about Carthon? How you doing, Ed?
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy birthday, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you for your fine customer service over the weekend for your site. I appreciate that.
Good what I could. Sorry it took a while.
No worries. Listen, Callahan talked about, I think it was an interview with Mike Keith. He talked about the reason why he wanted to call plays was to keep the continuity of the quarterback. If OCs leave, then he has that continuity if he calls the plays. But I'm wondering, does that limit him in the pool of who he can pick from? I mean, who would want to come without ever having, you know, a chance to call plays? So I just wonder if that limits his pool to pick from.
Thank you, Ed.
TK? Look, Zach Taylor got Brian Callahan. So Brian Callahan needs to find a Brian Callahan. It's a good stepping stone job.
Yeah. I mean, and more and more, I think we're going to see this, right? Like, if you can have success at a place and you're still intimately involved in designing the offense and all that stuff, you can still get jobs off that.
Frank Smith is going to be a hot candidate in a year as Mike McDaniel's non-play calling OC. Offensive coordinator.
All right, we come back. I'm going to make PK talk college hoops. Vandy, Tennessee played this weekend. Robbie and Rex are 1025, 106.3 The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan this Thursday night for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Commodores will be at home taking on Mississippi. Tip-off 6:30, pregame at 6:15. Coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. How about, what timing there? A little Rocky
like
Top.
Like to pair the Rocky Top with the Vandy
Rocky
promo.
Rocky Top with the Vandy promo, yeah.
Vandy people love that.
Yeah, I bet. Vanderbilt women having a very good season. I think they're going to go to the NCAA tournament. They hung in on the road to South Carolina yesterday quite well. And I'll find the comments that Dawn Staley made. But Dawn Staley, who's one of my favorite coaches in sports in general in this country, she was extremely impressed with Vanderbilt yesterday. Here's a quote. This is from an Aria Gerson tweet quote. She didn't have a whole lot of talent. Talking about Shea Ralph. A lot of injuries. She found a way to get her kids to play for 40 minutes no matter what the score was. Now that she has talent, you can see she's going to find herself right in the top of our league. That's Dawn Staley on Shea Ralph. That's a pretty good endorsement.
And next year, they're going to get even better because they got five-star recruit Michaela Blakes, who is a number 10 recruit from the class of 2024. She played high school ball at a little school called Rutgers Prep New Jersey, of which I am an alum.
Did you have anything to do with this recruitment?
Oh, God. I laid the
foundation. Aren't you a Hall of Fame member? Aren't you a Rutgers Prep Hall
of
Famer?
Class of 2017.
Soccer star. Right? What'd you play? What's your soccer position?
I played soccer and baseball. I was a striker.
Striker, look at you.
I was not very good. It was a dry period, and they needed to find Hall of Famers from a dry athletic period.
Okay. But you've got a fellow Rutgers Prep alum coming in here. Top 10 recruit.
She and I are going to hang a lot.
You should get over there and watch. That is a program that is very much on the rise. Meanwhile, I went to a men's basketball game Saturday night at Memorial Gym, Tennessee at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt hung in very well. And they were up five still, about 15 minutes to go. Tennessee eventually takes over. Tennessee has someone who I think has got to be mentioned as a player of the year candidate, I think, nationally. But meanwhile, Vanderbilt is in the dumps, 5-14, 0-6 in the SEC. Jerry Stackhouse's
time's
fifth
up.
Year. So I gave you that information, covered that game, 75-62, I believe, was the final, Tennessee or Vanderbilt. So your takeaway is more about Tennessee or more about Vanderbilt?
Oh, more about Tennessee. I mean, Vanderbilt is what it is. It's no news there. It's nice that they hung for a while, but ultimately they lost. It doesn't matter by how much. I mean, if it was a buzzer beater or something, that would have been a story. I read your story. I think maybe you're making a little bit too much about Connect. But
why?
Well, I read the comments there. A lot of people bashing you. I don't know the scene of national college basketball and the competition for him for player of the year. I watched some of this game. The guy is incredibly explosive to the basket, which is thrilling to see a guy change pace the way he does, be able to get into high gear in a step and explode. He's a heck of a player. But I would be, if I'm a UT fan, far less excited about the player of the year potential and far more excited about him being the kind of guy that could be a March Madness hero and play consistently well in three or four or five games in a row where you could dependably say this guy could score 25 a game like he's just scored in five games a row, averaging 32 points, and give us the consistency where somebody's not going to disappear or get overshadowed and lend us this inconsistency that we've had as a tournament team over the last several years.
It's always more about the team, of course it is.
To the potential.
Sure. That game struck me as like, does this guy need to start? Because everybody's like, well, he's SEC Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Okay. Although it's funny because Antonio Reeves at Kentucky is making a bid too. And there are other candidates even for that. But, you know, Zach Edey, and I'm a voter for the Naismith. One of them's Humble media, bad. One of them's not. Well, sure. But I'm just saying, like, Zach Edey, you know.
He votes for a big award, ladies and gentlemen, but he can't remember which big award he votes for. He'll have to go back into his computer to figure that out.
Exactly.
I vote for one of the massive college basketball awards, but I don't really know which one.
So there's two that are Player of the Year. One of them is the media vote.
That's the one you vote for, media vote.
And the other one is not. So I always
In the coaches vote one?
I always – oh, yeah, Wooden and Naismith. Yeah, Naismith voter.
Yeah. You prefer
the
Naismith
point
because
being,
he's older than Wooden.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that
I
is
talked
true.
To John Wooden once in my life.
Did you? Me too.
Yeah.
I was there when UCLA dedicated the court to him in December of 2003.
Wow.
And they beat Michigan State that day.
I had a phone call.
How about that? Oh, that's nice. A lot of humble bragging going on in this show today. So
I don't vote for any college basketball award.
Yeah. The reason I brought that up is because voters, as you know, as you vote for other things, they don't want to vote for the same person if they can help it. You know what I mean? So Zach Edey is the favorite from Purdue. He's bigger than everybody. He dominates. He might win it. Right now, he's the clear favorite to win it. But I think a lot of voters actually will try to find a reason to vote for someone else. That's how it goes, right? I mean, you know how it goes. It's just like, okay, there's a little bit of fatigue here. And very rarely in college sports in particular, you know, here and there we've seen a Heisman winner have a chance to win it again. But
people
never
had so much Peyton Manning fatigue, they didn't even vote for him the first time.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Is that what it was?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a great Heisman race. I know, not taken very well around here. But anyway, Dalton Connect is good enough to win Player of the Year. We'll see. Can he continue? He's averaging 31-plus in true road games, which is incredible. Now, Saturday technically counts as a true road game. It was absolutely a home game for Tennessee, which is embarrassing for Vanderbilt. You had students with actually bags on their heads, which, I mean, you do not see that too often in student sections. Now, they took them off, but showed up with bags on their heads. There was some booze for Stackhouse. It's a bad scene there. It's a great scene for Tennessee.
He's fired, right?
I mean,
you're
one of his biggest
supporters, well, and even you are going to say he's fired.
I mean, okay, I guess. I'm someone who doesn't think that he should have been fired right away like some people did. And, again, he was SEC Coach of the Year last year with a very good team that didn't do enough early, so they didn't get in the tournament, and maybe it'd be a different discussion. But I think 5 years not making the NCAA tournament, you're going to have a hard time finding the Power Five anyone keeping their job for a 6 year, if that's the case, right? So I would assume so. I do not know that. I would not report that, but I would think so. I mean, I think this year is kind of making it clear that it's time to move on. As far as Tennessee,
correct.
I'm with you. Dalton Connect gives them, I mean, he's the best player. He's the best pro prospect Rick Barnes has had. I'm not willing to say he's the best player because I still think Grant Williams as an all-around player, it's hard to top. And maybe I'm giving some of that to Grant Williams because he was such a key part of the program doing what it did. I mean, he's the ultimate player development, you know, example for people, right? I mean, he's a very overlooked recruit into an NBA player. But Dalton Connect is the most talented player Rick Barnes has had. And, yes.
And he's had some very talented players.
Yes. It's a one-year thing. It's an incredible transfer portal lad. And he will be that guy, but there were still going to be games in March where Vescovy, Ziegler, even James, who hasn't really been scoring at all, they're still going to have to hit shots. Some opponent is going to do something to say, you are not going to beat us. One of these guys has to hit shots, and we'll help off them, and that's fine. Someone will figure something out somewhere along the way. So,
and that was one of the themes after this game in the video that you put up. One of the questions was, you know, about that, you know, you taking the ball in the middle and drawing a crowd and being able to facilitate other people. Also, his teammates are dying for him to hit 40.
Yeah, that was that video, if you haven't seen it, it's on my X account. Jonas Adu was pretty funny in that one, I must say. So,
Are all the interviews done in the hallway? Is that part of the construction?
Yeah, it's a construction thing because they've had a visiting interview room, but they just don't right now. I think construction related. So yeah, we're just all out in the hallway, just crowding around people. Which
you had
not ideal.
Did you post up for that spot? You had a pretty good spot.
Yeah. I muscled my way in there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Vols are good. Vols have a chance to win all. There's some Vols fans who are always going to be like, yeah, Rick Barnes, March. I don't want to hear it, but
how many coaches,
if you got the
though,
goods, you got the
how
goods.
How many coaches, good, and Rick Barnes is clearly a good coach. How many good coaches struggle in the tournament for a long time before they break through? March Madness. There's a good share of coaches that took a long time. Boeheim took a long time
to
in
win
the
it,
tournament
yeah.
before he had
but he,
big,
but he
big
had,
tournament success.
Yeah, but he
and he's even, not alone.
No, but I mean Barnes is the most is the biggest contrast between regular season success, consistent excellence. I mean he's been to one Final Four. You know, he went to a Final Four 21 years ago. His one he just underperforms by seeding and everything in March like no one else. It's just part of his story.
My point is, I won't be surprised if he has a breakthrough. Like I'm not like he's doomed every time. Yeah. I'm like, there's going to come a year where they get to the final.
You keep knocking on the door, and it should be. But this is a special opportunity, kind of like the Lions had, and that was squandered. It keeps coming back to the Detroit Lions. We come back.
It all comes back to the Lions.
It's a birthday rant for Paul Kaharsky, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Yeah, this is Paul Kaharsky. I'm like, oh, that's how you say his last name?
I don't know if I said it that
was
way.
It was pretty dramatic.
I think that's some embellishment by you, which is good for radio, but yeah.
I like it. That's what from today. You know, you totally redeemed yourself, Nick, for playing Rocky Top while I did a Vandy promo, which people in the text are very mad about, by the way.
That was just skill.
Actually, we need to, keep that one, too.
You know what you should do now is next time that we're clearly talking Vols, you should play Vandy's theme song.
Well, I thought Joe was going to get into Vols regardless, which is why I played it.
Oh, no, I know, but it worked out beautifully.
Yeah.
So
you teased the game.
You just said Vandy's theme song, which is funny, a theme song.
Yeah, fight theme song. Like a TV show.
Yeah. Making your way in the world today.
Everything you got.
Yeah, there we go. This is good radio. What is I don't know Vanderbilt's fight song. Anybody? Like, I don't know it. What's it called? I mean, I've obviously heard it.
Is that it?
Is that really how it goes? We need to play this today, Keezer. You got to find it for us.
He's shaking his head like it's helpless. Like even the internet can't handle that one.
It's only fair to play that at some point.
I want to see if I was right.
All right, what's your rant today?
All right, listen.
You're 55
years old. I go through this. That's too easy.
You're halfway to 110. Go ahead.
I go through this every year. When I shift off of being at Titans games live and only watching Sunday night, Monday night football, which broadcasts are reasonably good, though I don't like Collinsworth, to watching many more games, listening to the broadcast crews. Nance and Romo are slipping badly. Andrew Marchand is writing about it. It's bad. But this is about one of their partners that they go to. This is a $30 million crew. But they got to go to Tracy and to Gene and to Jay Feely to supplement them because they don't have enough to say. 6:54 left in the Chiefs-Broncos game. A chance here to tie it. Isaiah Likely waves his hand, I'm open. And Lamar tries to throw to him in what winds up being triple coverage. Deion Bush with the interception in front of Likely, but behind the interception, which is in front of Likely, Charmani Connor, number 27, gives Likely a pretty good shove. Now, I don't think it's pass interference, but I think it's worth a conversation. This is what drives me crazy, crazy, crazy about commentary. And my wife, it points this out more than I do. You cannot show a replay and have somebody like Gene Steratore say, as you can see here, it's clear there is some contact unlikely, but it's well before, it's well after the ball arrives. It's after the ball arrives. While in the freeze frame, they're showing the ball is nowhere close yet to the interceptor or the intended receiver, and Connor is shoving likely. If the words coming out of your mouth don't match the picture always overrules the word, right? We say a picture tells a thousand words. I don't think it was PI worthy, but clearly the defender is pushing the receiver before the ball arrives, and I'm listening to you, the expert, tell me the opposite. I'm looking at it. What are you seeing? How are you saying these words when what you should also be looking at clearly shows something that is the exact opposite of what you are saying? And you are being highly paid to supplement Nance and Romo, and you're just saying something that's patently not true. This happens over and over and over. How could you be so bad at this?
Well, and to me, it's a good rant. It's also a mild example to me because I like the idea of the rules analyst. We need it a lot, and at times there's good commentary, but it's just way too much excuse making for bad calls. I mean, that's yeah. Right. I mean, very, very rarely.
It's a lot like, and he's been out of it for a while now, but the rules officials thing is a lot like the coach who's just out of the game who wants back in, or the player who's still got just retired and has friends. You can't be too critical of them because they're your boys. I want a rules official who's been out of it for 10 years and doesn't know the rules guys anymore, the officials anymore, who can give me an honest assessment.
The problem is, you know, if they've had a full career, then that might be, you know, that might be a little,
yeah,
you know, I mean, they might be in your demo. You know, we don't want that. You know,
but I love how I'm that old when you're four whole years younger than I am.
I mean, I'm young.
You were in eighth grade when I was a senior.
I'm young Gen X. That is an interesting point too, because like Barkley and those guys, like they don't. I mean, that's the best show in television history, in my opinion, inside the NBA, and they of course do not. They do not pull punches, right? But it's also they're a different generation. I'll be interested. Draymond Green, whenever he's done, and it's coming here pretty soon. The Warriors are winding down, and that dynasty's over. He might be the guy who comes right in and just is not afraid to unload on people. But you're right. For the most part, there's a lot of kind of hesitation in that way, right, when it's still a lot of your peers.
But that's not the root of my objection.
No,
here.
I understand.
The root of my objection is we're looking at one thing, and you're telling us something
like
else.
How could you be that
look
inaccurate when
this,
we're all seeing it?
Look at this blue picture while I tell you that it's red. I mean, it's not that far off of that.
Yeah.
And the production stuff has gotten worse. Like last week, there was a fake punt, and Nance just completely missed it. And CBS did not show a replay of the fake punt ever. How could you miss on that level and that game? You're paying billions of dollars for the rights, and then you're butchering it that badly. It's got to be better. And people, Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, I love because he hammers on these points. And I people have been getting on me like, why are you watching the pregame shows? Well, I don't intend to watch them. I just flip over. I'm ready for the game, and I flip over a little bit before. Pregame shows on American football are some of the worst television in history, particularly Fox.
Yeah, really.
They got eight
really
guys lined up there. All they do is guffaw at each other's stuff, which is horrible. NBC's Premier League stuff is so good. It's three people at a desk, all of whom know very well all the teams involved, all the issues, and they sit and have an intelligent conversation informed about the players, the games, the matchups, and what we've just seen in the first half. It's unbelievable. Every pregame halftime show should be modeled after that.
Real fast, what is – I don't think – I think Nance is the exact same. So it's all Romo. What is it, just that he's like – he's lazy now? He's not doing the work? Not doing the homework?
He said – Marshawn, I'm taking this from Marshawn – They did a Steelers, maybe the Steelers playoff game. And he said, boy, man, I put on the tape and Warren is a legitimate number two back. I'm really impressed. And Marshawn's saying, anybody that is in a fantasy league knows what Warren is.
Yeah.
He's making millions and millions of dollars and he had to turn on the tape to know he's not following the league.
Fair point. All right, when we come back, Corey Curtis, Robbie Rexall, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.